There's far too many of you dying.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kisser.
I seem to be inept at everything except my work. I'm good at my work. So I confine myself to that. All I want out of life is a 30 share and a 20 rating.
The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense. I'm a little man. He's a great man.
Think of it as colors. There's black and there's white. And in between is mostly gray. That's us. Now, gray is a tough color because it's not as simple as black and white. And for the media, certainly not as interesting. But it's who we are.
This is your It Isn't a Best of One Leader Fan Radio Network.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
It must be. KFAN.com. 1 minute, 42 seconds past the hour of 3 o'clock Central Daylight Saving Time. We welcome you back to the Bumper to Bumper program. It's a 3.5 hour tour on an increasingly cloudy Wednesday afternoon here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. My name is Dan Barrero, the hockey ambassador. Guardsy is the producer of the show, two-time state high school tennis champion. Did you ever consider, you were a very versatile athlete growing up. Did you dabble in hockey? Did you ever, the Edina Hornets program speaks for itself.
I know.
Were you ever inspired by the idea of, you know what? Because, you could do both, right? The seasons... Do the seasons get in the way of one another?
Well, I was a basketball player, so that was going to be the issue.
Oh, I forgot about the basketball. Yeah. Well, but even then, when you're deciding, all right, what other sport beyond tennis do I want to play, was there ever any interest in becoming an Edina Hornet hockey player rather than a basketball gunner?
Well, and I was a gunner.
Yeah.
Chucker, more specifically, was a nickname of mine. I'll answer it this way. You know, Edinburgh over off of, is it York Avenue?
Yeah,
the big green. They've got the indoor park and they've got an indoor skating rink.
Yeah.
I went skating there when I was 8 or 9 years old, fell immediately and cut my hand on the blade.
Oh, that was it?
Yeah, I was kind of late to the game. By the time we got to Edina, I was 7 or 8 years old. The kids are already, doing Herbies and, they're already, the teams are already set. So
yeah,
I was pretty much late to the game.
So it was never.
No.
Never really going to be in the cards. Do you regret it at all?
Not really. It worked out okay.
Yeah.
I would have been a good goalie, I think. I think I could have been a good goalie.
Good reflexes? Good instinct?
Like when we play pond hockey or we play knee hockey, I was always a goalie, so I could. I was okay there. But no, skating was not a forte of mine. And it has to be there, obviously. You've got to be basically, more so since I left.
It can't be remedial.
No, you cannot.
For sure. That's a very, very good point. Power Pack broadcast today, including a 4:55 visit with Russo Radio. Pat Kessler, Wednesday regular, also is on the Borton Volvo scorecard, I should say, for this afternoon and evening. Four opportunities to put a grand in your hand, thanks to Wixon Jewelers as well. We will. We generally consider ourselves a combo platter program, and there'll be much of that today. We'll be inside the toy department for a lot of it, outside the toy department for significant sections of it as well. Either way, you can email us via the Bradshaw and Brian inbox starting right now, Booth, B-O-O-T-H, at KFAN.com, Booth at KFAN.com. I mentioned that we are indeed your It Isn't a Best of One leader. That was made abundantly clear in Game 2, because it wasn't as if after winning the opener in pretty grand fashion that it was announced the Wild were moving on past the qualifying round to the so-called regular first round. They said, no, it's a short series. It's shorter than what we are accustomed to, but it ain't a best of one. It ain't even a best of three. It is a best of five. And Vancouver did exactly what it was fairly obligated to do, win the ball game or win the puck game. And it sounds as if pretty much everything we were aroused by in the opener was negated, nullified by a combination, I'm assuming, of regression by the Wild and an improvement in performance, perhaps in urgency, from the team that, as we said, I mean, the series is effectively over if you go down 2-0. And so Vancouver indeed played like it. The whole matchup going in was, how do we handle their top six? And in game one, we handled them very well. And in game two, we didn't handle them at all. And to a large extent, I think Russo suggested we played on the perimeter too much as well. You could say our penalty killing was actually pretty effective. But given the number of times we were at a man disadvantage, you'd say, well, that in itself is a bit of a problem. So even if you're good at limiting their power play goals, you're also, by being at that disadvantage, limiting your own chances to come back, to make it a game. And I know it was made a game very, very late. Was it 27 seconds? Fiala had two goals in the last 2.5 minutes, was it?
Yes.
And the last one was with 27 seconds to go?
I thought it was with like 7 seconds.
I think you're right.
Go.
I think you're right. It's even anyway. Inside 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line is we lose. And, you know, as Flip Saunders, the late, great Flip Saunders, used to tell us, it's not a series till each team has won. I think actually his cliche was it's not a series until you win on their court and they win on your court.
Right.
There's no real courts here. I mean, we're all on the same ice, so to speak. There's no real
our ice.
Home ice advantage, but we now sit at 1-1. I don't know what the stats show on best of five series. We assume, everybody always assumes game three is pivotal. It certainly feels as if it would be pivotal. And if you follow the notion of, all right, now it's the Canucks responded professionally and perhaps strategically. Now, if you're playing a game of chess, it's our move. It's up to us to counter what they did, which was to counter what we did in the opening game a couple of nights ago. So I tried to gently remind people yesterday that, you know, we haven't really, it's a little early for celebration. I understand why people were encouraged because we've just had nothing to get excited about. We have had nothing to react to, period, other than the Twins. And
that's all positive.
And that's all positive to this point. But reality is that one game, you can write this down. One game does not a series make. And it was, it's going to be a slog. And now we find out, as I said, how we respond and if we can turn it back their way. And I'll even add this. As hungry as we are, there's a reason they're calling this the qualifying round. Now, they're technically saying this is the playoffs. And so on the resume, the Wild can put down, we made the playoffs again.
Seven out of 8 years.
Even if they lose the next two and get eliminated very quickly. 7 out of 8 years. That's right. That's the stat, I think. But I'm not going to be ready for a parade if we're able to win this first round series. It'd be a nice start because that's all you can do. Right now, but it was an utter and complete, on many levels, reversal. Did they start a fight early? Did that energize them? Were there any fights? I don't remember if there were any fights early.
There were some scraps,
skirmishes.
Yeah, it was intense. It's chippy now. It's definitely chippy. There was a lot of extracurriculars. I was thinking last night it would actually be a fun series if fans were allowed because that does add. You know,
yes,
it's being played right now with the playoff intensity that everybody likes. When I mean intensity, I do mean the after the whistle stuff. The skirmishes, the drive-bys, you got guys grabbing people's sticks in the benches, all of those things. It's got that feel. So it's too bad fans aren't there, but it's still fun to watch because there is that little extra edge. But they were ready to go. I mean, they scored 24 seconds in. And then the Wild were chasing basically metaphorically and in actuality all night long.
And we got the early lead. It wasn't that early, but we got that early lead as well in the opener, correct?
Yes.
In game one, we could say same thing. They were... they were indeed chasing. In any case, we need to be at even strength a little more often than we were in game two. I think most of the hockey experts will agree on that, even if you can, you know, pat yourself on the back and say, well, we only gave up one. Was it that we were at a disadvantage? Was it 7 or 8 times?
I counted before the show, to be sure. I counted 8 penalties.
8 penalties, and I think they got one power play goal. But again, you can say from a statistical standpoint, that's pretty damn good penalty killing, but it means you're spending too much of your time having to resort, one could say, to penalty killing.
Well, in the first 5-6 minutes of the third period, they were killing because they took a penalty early, right. And then right as that one was about to expire, they took another one, or I think it did just expire, and they took another one out of nowhere, and you're down at that point. You're chasing, like I just said, and you're back-to-back times in the box.
4-1, we were down, and then Fiala scores, 2:28 to go, and then he scores with 9 seconds left. And then I didn't see this. Did you see the desperation shot from center ice?
I did.
Was it as tricky as it's being described here? Because I gave up on the club. Mm-hmm. I got to admit, when it was 4-1, I gave up on the club. I put the teeth in the glass.
I don't know why I stayed with it, but I did. I watched the entire game.
And so describe what happens. Hunt lets loose basically with a desperation shot as time's expiring from center ice.
Exactly.
And is it kind of like a knuckleball? Because it's being described here as Markstrom was almost like flummoxed by it. And almost somehow was going to let that thing through. By the way, would it have counted?
Yes.
It would have counted.
Russo in his gamer said that it would have counted.
Okay.
It did look like, you know, he's saying that he made the choice to let it just hit his body, the goalie. He's basically saying like,
I see.
It was coming, I was going to let it hit
me. No harm, no foul.
Because the speculation was he didn't see it. He didn't even realize that they had shot it.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I mean, it could, obviously, it would have counted.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if he was celebrating early or what, or if he didn't see it, or if he was just letting it hit his body. But,
well,
he just kind of flipped it up there, and it looked like, to me, he didn't see it or didn't expect that it was coming.
That would have been a hell of a story right
there.
Well,
it would have been unbelievable.
That would have been. You should have then called me at that point to wake up.
Louis and you. I would have had to call both of you.
That's a good question. I wonder if Louis followed through. Well, no, I don't think he has to follow through with his tradition after the first game, which was game's over, Wilder fine, we're going to bed after the second period, because in this case they were behind.
Yeah, that's true.
So to that extent, you'd like to think he stayed through the whole thing, did not put the teeth in the glass. What does this comment have to do with what we've been talking about? Dylan writing, Seahawks better than Vikings, enough said.
Has nothing to do with anything.
Is that related? Is that, maybe it is, and I'm missing it. It's just, when we get these sort of arbitrary comments out of nowhere, I'm always intrigued by them. If somehow he's trying to draw an analogy between this series and the two teams and the Seahawks and the Vikings, why would he be thinking about, or was that maybe part of the conversation at the end of the program?
That's always possible. We get, you know, when we should probably tell people about this, because we get a lot of emails, like on Sunday morning when I'm in that chair, right. I'll get emails that are like, hey, PA, quick question about Justin Jefferson, you know, and they'll write like a long thing.
Right.
And so I'll either try to forward it when I can or whatever. But we get a lot of emails. It's just kind of a way station for everybody to,
reach out
to everybody.
They tend to, and sometimes they're just delayed. For whatever reason, they take a while to get here, because we'll get some in the afternoon that's intended for the morning show or for other shows over the course of the day. And I got to believe they were sent much earlier, but somehow
lost in space,
a little like the U.S. Postal Service. Apparently, at this particular juncture as well. Let's get a break in. I got to get to another emailer suggesting that I might owe somebody an apology, not Minnesota Twins related, but maybe Minnesota Wild related. Speaking of funky phantom goals, I endured one as a hockey fan long before I was a hockey ambassador in Chicago, Illinois, that remains one of the strangest and most inexplicable in Stanley Cup playoff history, and to a certain extent, I'm still not completely over it. So we'll get to that as well. So we'll stay with the hockey discussion, but first, a chance to put a grand in your hand.
The Phantom Wixson Jewelers want to give you a shot to put a grand in your hand with our national cash contest. Text the keyword FUN to 200-200. That's the first entry. Text the keyword FUN to 200.
The Fan.
Well, we thought they did a real good job of getting back and collecting those pucks. We didn't put it into intelligent areas either. And for whatever reason, we didn't have the same extra that we had in game one to get to those pucks.
Dean Evason not quite as happy after the game two as he was after, obviously, game number one. Minnesota Wild now go back to the ice tomorrow day, preempting this program, actually. Middle of the day, I think 1:30 is when our coverage starts for the all-pivotal game three in a best-of-five series. Russo Radio chronicling, of course, all of it. So I guess to a certain extent, one could say predictable that you'd see a different Vancouver team, because if not, then they weren't going to get back to it. So the obvious toss-up question for you is, what is the most important counter the Wild must make to the counter that the Canucks made after our Game 1 victory?
Well, I think, just getting better matchups. The one thing the Wild haven't done in this series yet is really take advantage of, in my eyes, a pretty inferior blue line and the third and fourth lines of Vancouver, especially at even strength, where the Wild don't have a 5-on-5 goal yet. So, now that the Wild are quote unquote the home team and will have last change, now it's let's see if Dean Evason can get the better of the matchup that Travis Green got last night. So, I think that we all looked at this series as the only way the Wild were going to lose this series is that top six of Vancouver beat them.
Yep.
The Wild won that battle in game one. They clearly lost it in game two, but it's really, it's been as advertised right now. Right now, the only thing that has this series tied is the fact that Vancouver's top six came through last night. So, it's proven that the third and fourth lines are just not good enough, especially now that they're banged up. And you have, less experienced guys coming in. I mean, when Louis Erickson at this stage in his career is playing 20 minutes a night on the second line last night, and the Wild can't take advantage of that, that's an absolute, I don't want to use the word travesty, but that's just a total injustice. And you just can't let that happen. So they've got to play smarter. And everything that they did well in game one was the complete opposite yesterday, from nullifying the top six to being disciplined to getting in on the forecheck, to getting the saves. I mean, everything they did well in game one, they didn't do last night.
So that's why they call it a series, right? I mean, that's the whole point. Yeah. There's going to be ebb and flow. The good teams, or the teams that are deserving, are able to, like I said, counter whatever's been countered for them. That's pretty much the whole game here. Let me ask you a coaching question. Louis yesterday said he thought coaching matters more in the postseason than the regular season. Do you agree with that? And if you do, what specifically about coaching? Is it matchups? What do you think becomes even more important about a coach's influence during the postseason?
Well, I mean, other than the obvious that it's one out of 82 games in the regular season when you screw up, like, say, in that one game in Pittsburgh where the lineup mistake was made earlier this year by Bruce, to everything that you do in the postseason in a short series, now magnified by the fact that it's a 5-game series as opposed to a 7, it's absolutely big. So where you might not want to overreact in a 7-game series going into game 3, right now, I mean, it's essentially a 2-2 series, and you better make the right moves. And so this is Dean Evason's first real test now in this series. So what do? You have right now a bunch of lines that are not playing, that are not producing other than that top line. And really, that top line, Kevin Fiala has 3 goals in the series, but one's on a power play, 2 aren't 6-on-5s in the last couple minutes of the game when the Wild were down 3. So at even strength, when Stahl's line, which Jordan Greenway and Kevin Fiala are going head-to-head with Pettersson, JT Miller, and in the case of last night, Brock Besser, in the case of Sunday night, Tyler Toffoli, the Wild are actually getting outplayed at even strength. They've only managed 5 scoring chances, according to the analytics site. So, now's the time where Dean's going to have to look at the lineup and say, do you shuffle it around? Zach Parise is somebody that needs help at even strength. He needs somebody to get him the puck, and I don't know if Eric Fenech and Cunning can do that. So do you take a guy like Matt Zuccarello, who is not playing well at all on the third line, and you just say, hey, we got to get a playmaker with Zach Parise and put him on that line? That third line last night with Foligno and Galchenyuk and Zuccarello was really terrible. I just got off the phone with Foligno about an hour ago, and he essentially said that. So They need to, that's one thing he's got to figure out. But two, from the obvious perspective in a short series like this, again, tomorrow the Wild are the home team. You have obvious deficiencies that Vancouver has that can be exposed if you get the matches that you want. So, you know, I think that the Wild, have to figure out a way to get Fiala out against the third and fourth lines and the third and second defense pairs of Vancouver. And same thing, I think Zach Parise needs help at even strength. And so, you've got to take advantage of those matchups and then trust that whether it's Staal or whether it's Eriksson Ek or whether it's Koivu, that they're going to be able to shut down the Pettersson line.
Russo Radio with us on the Fan. Kessler will follow, and we'll have the top five at 5:55 today as well. Was the last desperation shot from center ice, was it as tricky as it appeared? How did you see it?
Yeah, I mean it was crazy. That puck was going in. If that doesn't hit Markstrom, it's in, and the Wild tie that game from the other side of the ice from Brad Hunt. And so, the way it looked to me is that Markstrom wasn't paying attention and it fooled him. But he says after the game that no, when you have that much time to react, sometimes there's like 50 things going in your head, and I just decided at the last minute to let it hit me. But really, it hit him in the mask, and if that thing caromed, that was going right in the net, and that would have counted. I went back and actually today looked at the time, and it 100% would have counted. So I don't know if that would have been a Dan Cloutier moment, which is the Canucks goalie of yesteryear that used to give up a lot of those center ice shots,
yeah,
or seemingly give up a lot. But it certainly looked like Markstrom down the stretch was not, very focused.
Would have changed your you'd have to, I think, start over on your gamer, I'm sure.
What? It's funny. It's, that's the beauty of being at The Athletic now is I really don't. I don't really write now until
that's
after
true.
The game
because
I don't file at the gun, where
good
that
point.
Would have absolutely – at that time, killed the Pioneer Press in the Strip. I can't even imagine. That is, I used to love Deadline, but that's the type of stuff I would not have been able to rewrite that in a second. I remember I once covered a game, actually Zuccarello was the star of the game. It was a Wild game in New York City, and the Wild were up 5-1 or 4-1, like late in the third period, and wound up losing in regulation, and it was a horror show, filing that thing at the gun, so... that's the type of stuff I don't miss by being at The Athletic.
Fiala, well, he's got three goals now in a hurry, but he also expressed, I think pretty honestly, some frustration with his own approach, especially in game two. Why is he unhappy?
Yeah, I think that he's being targeted, but he's not upset that he's being targeted. I think he takes it as a rite of passage, as a prideful thing, because he sees superstars around the league get treated the way that he's getting treated right now, which is a Vancouver Canucks team that's paying special attention to the biggest threat on the Minnesota Wild. So he's not frustrated by that. If anything, he's probably frustrated that he feels like, the game's tight and he's not converting on the chances when it matters. But what he really talked a lot about today, or not a lot about, but what we asked him about, is that he fully acknowledged that he loses his temper at times on the ice and shows his frustration a lot. We see it in scrimmages. He wants to score every single time he's got the puck on his stick, and when he doesn't, he gets super ticked off and has these tantrums where he's smacking his stick, and it's probably more glaring now with no fans and the fact that you can hear him snapping. And then last night, he didn't get a call on what he felt was a cross-check by, I believe, Besser. Really, I looked at it again, and to me, Besser was just finishing his check. But he gets up, and he just starts screaming at referee Chris Rooney. And then in the middle of play, essentially stopped playing and started yelling at the ref. And finally, when there was a whistle, he went back at Rooney. And Rooney, who is a New Englander, a veteran referee, was not having it and told him to get the heck away from him. And I think that he just, basically said that he has to focus on the right things to produce on the ice and stay off the referees. And I think Dean Evason has told him that too. And as, Fiala and Evason have admitted a lot of times, he's a young guy that, sometimes he's still learning to become a professional. And look, all these guys lose tempers on the ice, but I think that, he just lost his focus yesterday. But, as I tried to point out in my story where, you're writing about that, is that like the least of the Wild's problems right now are Kevin Fiala, right? Their problems are the fact that they have no 5-on-5 goals in the series and that they've had two forwards in the entire series score and three total players score. So, if Kevin Fiala gets frustrated but is scoring three goals in two games, I think the Wild can handle that. It's just now of a matter of getting everybody else going.
You know, we talked a lot about how the tone got set early in game one in the Wild's favor with the early goal. Yeah. Did you feel it was the same with the early goal for Vancouver as well last night?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's just natural. You give up the first goal of the game, but especially on the first shot on such a weird, funky bounce as last night's was, it's just you're going to sag right away. What was impressive is that the Wild recovered and got the tying goal on a shorty by Luke Cunnan. And then, they don't get that momentum because the beginning of the second period, Alex Galchenyuk just, commits an atrocious turnover. As I've said to you 1,000 times, the two worst players hit places on the ice to turn a puck over is the offensive and defensive blue lines, because there's just, you're going to get odd man numbers, you're going to be absolutely flat footed, and the other team's going to come on the attack. And, the worst part is that there was a perfect mismatch there. Travis Green, as I said, as we talked about a couple days ago, is Travis Green, I don't think in game one did a good enough job getting that Miller-Pettersson line out there enough against the third and fourth lines, or the third line of Minnesota, because it's hard to get mismatches when you have Koivu, Eriksson, and Staal as your centerman. So he got them out against Galchenyuk, and what does Galchenyuk do? He plays right into it with a horrific turnover, and JT Miller, their best scorer during the regular season, gets the puck and just scores a beauty on Alex Stalock. So I just got off the phone with Foligno for what's going to be a diary that will run first thing tomorrow morning, and he was not happy with the play of his line with Zuccarello and Galchenyuk, and he said it's got to change. The question is, do they get a chance to change together, right? That's the thing. Does Dean Evason allow that line to stay intact, or does he change it up? If it were me, I would mix things up. I would probably put Zuccarello with Parisi. I would probably keep Galchenyuk in that spot, but maybe move Donato up to that spot and put Foligno next to Koivu. I do think that even strength-wise, in a best of five, I know that a lot of fans don't want you to overreact at times, but you got to win. And the Lions right now in two games in, I know it's only two games, they're just not producing at all at even strength. So I just think, as Louis said, when you're a coach in the playoffs, now's the time that you've got to make some moves. And I think that Dean's going to probably do it going into tomorrow's game.
Do we have a relatively small sample size of Evason's coaching in terms of how quickly he makes those kinds of changes, and a very small sample size in terms of the postseason as a head coach? But has he, in the regular season, was he a guy, as compared to most coaches, was he a guy who tended to do that a lot, to make those changes, not so more conservative on it? Do we have any track record to fall back on here?
Yeah, his track record, I think, is a decent sample size, and his track record is not to make changes. We saw after Bruce Boudreau was fired, he went with the exact same lines. Then he came up with some consistent lines down the stretch. And, what I was really surprised by is that the exact same lines that were in the final practice March 11th, we've seen throughout training camp and in the series. He hasn't changed it once. These lines that we're seeing right now are the exact lines that we saw on March 11th. And, I don't love the look of these lines. I think that you have a second line with Parisi and Cunnan and Eriksson Ek that it's almost impossible to score, when Zach's skating with those two guys. And so, I think he's got to switch it up. And God knows, I don't like the way that Zuccarello has played from minute one with the Minnesota Wild. But I don't see how he fits on that third line with Foligno. And to me, when you got the best playmaker or one of the best playmakers on the team, playing limited minutes, and not with your top goal scorer in Zach Parise, I just think you're miscasting him. So, God knows I'm not one to reward somebody who's not playing well, but I think that tomorrow is a game where probably Zuccarello needs to figure out a way to be, or they've got to figure out a way to get Zuccarello in a better position.
You can argue that the penalty kill is actually very effective, but the other way to look at that is the amount of time the Wild had to spend with down a man is part of the problem, based on the stats that you write about and you've alluded to here. The team tied for the most even strength goals in the league, 37 in the NHL, after Evason took over, and the team had the sixth most 5-on-5 goals during the season. This is, to your point, they got to play 5-on-5 more often, and as much as they were on the penalty kill yesterday, you ain't playing at even strength on the penalty kill.
Yeah, and the irony again is they didn't score any 5-on-5 goals in game one, but they were so disciplined that they played a lot of 5-on-5 and they played a lot in the offensive zone. So even if you're not scoring goals, just being in the offensive zone obviously is going to be a very good thing. And that's why this wasn't a huge storyline after they won game one. But now you're two games into it. There was 15 penalties called last game. They don't get any flow at even strength. They don't get established their forecheck going. Their power play was really, really, even though they had 9 shots, extremely perimeter. And now, you get what you got yesterday, which was a 4-3 loss that really was a lot worse than the final score indicated.
Right.
So, they've got to stay out of the box tomorrow, and figure out a way to get, I know it's simplistic, but to get that early lead again, especially on the front end of back-to-backs, is that you want tomorrow's recipe to be like game one. So this way, Dean Evason, if you could ride an early lead and play that way the whole game, now you don't have to play Suter, Spurgeon, Brodin, and Dumba a gazillion minutes, and you don't have to overplay your top line the way that they did in the final 3 minutes of the game where Fiala didn't even leave the ice once. So, because otherwise that will catch up to you on Friday night, even though it's an odd back to back where there's really 32 hours between games. It's still a back to back in the playoffs when these guys haven't played in 5 months. So, eventually, your legs are going to catch up to you in these situations.
By the way, if this series goes five, are we going every other day all the way through? So the even for five, game five would be Sunday.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So, back to back, and then they'll take Saturday off, play Sunday, then
right.
one day off, and the next round starts, and it's going to be that way. There's one day off between rounds. Carolina right now is the team that's going to get a lot of rest here.
NBA had another, I think, press release saying zero confirmed positive COVID-19 tests. Their record is pristine at this point. NHL numbers pretty much the same, right? I mean, we've got so far, at least, and I know it's not over for either of them, really encouraging numbers from within those two bubbles.
No doubt. And that's the battle, as Bill Maurice has told you a gazillion times and has told me, and my story is that, it takes 3 to 5 days from being exposed to the virus to really test positive. So the fact that all these teams have been in the bubble now for well more than a week and there have been zero positives, it would be almost impossible for the virus to get in there unless it's essentially there are cases where you can leave the bubble and come back in. So, in the case of Kaprizov of the air gets to Edmonton, in the case of team doctors are a great example. They're team doctors, but they're coming into these bubbles. They're rotating the team doctors. And so they're coming in. If there's any arena workers or hotel workers or bus drivers of security that are not technically part of the bubble, that'd be a way. But right now, it shows you the way that baseball should have done it, which is kind of ironic because if I remember, baseball was the first one that floated the idea of the bubbles. Then the other teams sort of picked up on the ideas and other leagues picked up on the ideas and then wound up doing it and baseball wound up not doing it. And they're just the ones that are a complete mess right now. And, the bubble's the way to go. I think MLS hasn't had, at least last I looked, they haven't had a positive test in like 2 or 3 weeks down there. So, it looks like that the NHL and the NBA and Major League Soccer and all these leagues are going to be able to pull it off.
Thanks, Russo Radio. We'll be in touch. Be good.
Take care.
Russo Radio helping us out. Don't forget game 3 tomorrow, our telecast. Our radio broadcast will begin on our flagship FM 100.3 The Fan at 1:30. And basically, then we're off because by the end of that game, there'll be an extended wine line. I'm assuming that's with Micheletti and with Tenabee. So it'll be all hockey all afternoon on The Fan starting at 1:30. Another chance now to put a grand in your hand.
The Fan and Wixson Jewelers would like to put a grand in your hand. Text the keyword RICH to 200-200 to enter our national cash contest. Text RICH to 200-200.
Pat Kessler with some interesting sound. Play that again.
This is Pat Kessler.
What the hell is that? Is that really Kessler? And what is he, 9 years?
The Fan.
I wish the American media would take a great look at the views of the people in Congress and find out, are they pro-America or anti-America?
Pat Kessler.
This is Pat Kessler.
You've got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
I can't trust Obama.
He's an Arab.
Pat Kessler.
Tear down.
This is Pat Kessler.
Wall.
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
Pat Kessler.
This is Pat Kessler.
Now, to help Dan break down all the tough questions in politics.
This is Pat Kessler.
Pat Kessler.
That's great.
Political wonk.
This is Pat Kessler.
I feel like a supermodel, except like times 10.
It's Channel 4's
Pat Kessler
with Dan Barrero.
Just creepy.
On the Fan.
This is Pat Kessler.
That's just, it's more unsettling the more you play it.
This is Pat Kessler.
You want to explain that? And the sad thing is, because you've got that one of those outsized TV egos,
yeah.
You send it to us.
Yeah.
So give us some context. It is you.
Oh,
you can confirm that it's you.
And we've got more.
Yeah.
And can you give us where that came from? The occasion? And how old were you then? 9 or 35?
Well, it sounds like I'm like 11 years old.
Yeah.
This is Pat Kessler. This is Pat Kessler.
So today, you just had Michael Russo on. By the way, really happy to hear him back. Love having hockey back. I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about this, but man, that was great. But today is Herb Brooks' birthday, correct? August 5th, 1937.
Wow.
So today is Herbie's birthday.
Yeah.
This is a story that Minnesota Public Radio tweeted out.
This is Pat Kessler.
When I was hanging out with Herb Brooks, can you say the same?
I've had a moment or two with Herbie.
I'll bet you have.
Yeah. Herbie actually, once upon a time at a golf tournament, he saved me from having my legs crushed, to be quite honest, because there was a golf cart going by that I didn't see. He grabbed me by the arm, or I would have been nailed by a golf. And I think I would have survived, but the bottom line is he actually saved me on that occasion.
So he pulled you out of the way,
yes.
And therefore you owed your life to
One could say that, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. So, that's really, yeah. So this was in 1980, as I was a young reporter, Minnesota Public Radio tweeting out from their archives today a story that I did as the Miracle on Ice team returned to Minnesota.
You are old.
To William Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And this was my story. I was hoping he'd pick out some of my. There are flashes of future genius in this.
I never knew you worked for NPR.
I've worked for NPR for a number of years because my first gig in the business. We've all had different jobs, right?
No.
This is Pat Kessler.
Rosen's never had a different job.
That's true, but he started at WCCO when he was like 12.
That's
right?
True, yeah.
Yeah, so my first gig was as a roadie for the radio program Prairie Home Companion.
That's right, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's it.
That's where you got your poetry writing skills.
Did he ever send you any unsettling letters?
This is Pat Kessler.
Well, let's just say that sometimes I was paid in groceries, because I was, a young, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do, yes.
Sometimes some vegetation, some groceries.
Oh, my God.
And
getting weirder by the minute.
I drove the bus on the Prairie Home Companion tour for a while. But, yeah, so then I wormed my way into Minnesota Public Radio, would not allow them to let me leave, and I ended up with Herbie Brooks and the Miracle on Ice team at Williams Arena, and there you go.
About 2,500 University of Minnesota students waited in the stands at Williams Arena for about an hour for a 20-minute glimpse of America's new Olympic heroes.
Creepy.
Heroes
it's
who played their hockey for the U of M under Herb Brooks.
Yeah. That's you know what's sad about that? It's a phony voice, and it's not. Thank God that at CCO they've allowed you to be you, because I hate to say it, that sounds like the quintessential NPR voice. It really does.
Yeah,
it does.
I'm doing what I think they want me to do. I'm like the people who work for President Trump. I'm doing what I think the president of NPR wants me to be.
You're a pleaser. You've always been a pleaser.
Like Alec Baldwin when he mimics the radio host on Saturday Night Live.
Sweaty balls?
NPR. Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think he stole sweaty balls from you.
Hey, you know, two people have emailed saying they think that that voice sounds like David Kahn.
It does a little bit.
Let's hear it again.
What?
About 2,500 University of Minnesota students waited in the stands.
Can you use that same voice and
glimpse of America's new Olympic heroes?
Sure.
And say bifurcate. Use that same NPR voice and say bifurcate.
I tried to get the team going, and now we need to bifurcate the season.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't know. Show of hands.
That's it. That's David Kahn. That's the Meerkat. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, maybe this was the thing. Now, you know, he's just Gargi's just picking it up from the top, but. I mean, it gets really detailed where, you know, I'm, you know, we're talking to Baker and we're talking, you know, I'm hearing the crowd and then really fantastic writing. I'm sure I won some awards for it because, you know, what was I, 35 by.
Well, you
know,
if we're doing the math, you would have been, even though you sound like you're nine, you would have been 35 years old. Because what year was that? That was obviously
1980.
Yeah. So you were 35. At the
35
time.
Years old, yeah.
Man.
So the 20-minute ceremony ended quickly after that, but out of the stands came all the 10-year-old hockey players that weren't so noticeable before. They gathered around the new American heroes wide-eyed, and the Olympians actually let the kids hold their medals in their hands.
Wow.
They
held them in front of a small plaque, quoting Herb Brooks. You were born to be a player. You were meant to be here. This is your moment. This is Pat Kessler.
This is Pat Kessler.
I love the dramatic delay.
The pause. That's dramatic. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm done.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to tell you who I am yet.
You know you stole that.
Yeah, because I want this to sink in and soak it in.
You know who stole it? You stole that pause from Edward R. Murrow. He was famous for his pauses like that.
Probably.
Just the dramatic pauses changes everything to bring something fresh to a story.
This is Pat Kessler.
This is Pat Kessler. And I know Gargi is making fun of me, but, you know, Gargi, I met Herb Brooks. You know, did you?
No, I met Kurt Russell.
Who played him
at the Ryder Cup. And when I say I met him, he sat right behind me on the first hole when my dad and I went there to watch the opening shots. Kurt Russell was there, and we all felt good as Ryder Cup fans because Kurt Russell was there. And he was Herb Brooks. So we felt like we were in good hands.
Who was a better Herb Brooks? Herb Brooks or Kurt Russell?
Herb Brooks.
Gargi?
I gotta say Herbie probably, but Russell, they say, captured the essence pretty well.
Yeah, he really did. It's gotta be Herbie. For those of us who met him, right, Dan?
Yes, I guess.
We would say Herbie.
I would lean that way, I guess, yeah.
Did you lose yourself in his eyes?
No, I mean, this was a hard-charging guy. You know, as you heard me quote him, this is your moment.
This is Pat Kessler.
Kids. I actually think the guy who gets ignored way too often and is underrated as playing Herbie Brooks was the great, late, great Carl Malden.
Oh.
Carl Malden played him, too. He's brilliant.
Now, what was that a made-for-TV? What was that?
I can't remember.
I kind of remember that, though.
Yeah. It was very good. I'm assuming with Herbie with you was... You know, Herbie divided the world up into hockey people and non-hockey people.
And
I'm sure he identified you as a non-hockey person.
He probably did, because, you know, public radio.
Yeah, exactly. I fought that a little bit with him as well, but I still enjoyed the repartee, because you could take a punch, you could fire back at him, you could have some fun.
Well, he gave it, didn't he? I mean, he gave it out, yeah.
Feisty, but entertaining.
Very.
And, again, he could joust, but he wouldn't be offended if you jousted back, is what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely.
That was the great
thing
about, among other things, about Herb Brooks, for sure.
Happy birthday, Herbie.
It's got to be, you remember being that young?
You know, I barely remember, like, 3 months ago before COVID.
Right.
You know, that's kind of where I am. and there's me. How many sports events have I covered? That's the World Series.
That was 1987. Your voice got higher in 7 years.
Yeah, that's what doesn't make any sense. How did your voice get
lower?
Well, but it wasn't. But see, NPR makes you have that first voice, and by then he obviously was Channel 4.
That's true.
That's the change.
And then I have to talk in a downbeat. Pat Kessler.
Yes.
So then we're talking in a downbeat.
This is Pat Kessler.
Yeah, so that's what we're trying to do.
God, that's just,
you know, I practice
creepy.
All the time. You know,
40 years ago.
You know, think about it.
I'm amazed you found that.
So yeah, well, it's everywhere on the internet. The kids are putting it out there now. So,
I want to break here, and then I want to get to. There's a bunch of stuff we need to discuss, including the Fry Walls controversy, which I think a lot of people thought was put to bed, but then got a second life because of an interview given by the mayor of the city of Minneapolis. We'll talk about that. Breaking news regarding the Democratic National Convention, which we will indeed discuss as well. And then maybe the question of whether we should even hold debates at all. A lot of meat on the bone this week, politically speaking, for Pat Kessler. Let's get a pause in, and we will continue part two with him in a minute.
This is